That Quail Robert by Margaret Stanger, Hodder and Stoughton, 1966. Chapter 6, A Big Problem. I am going to remind us in prayer, Father, that worship is good and that we get to sing and to enjoy our gathering together as a body and as individuals, that we get to sing and proclaim your goodness throughout the day. So I pray that the kids, the grandkids, would be willing to sing and to proclaim your goodness to one another, to themselves, and to you, Lord, to worship with the music. We give you thanks for this chapter in Jesus' name. Amen. For almost a year, I had lived in that idyllic condition of life that is generally conceded to belong to grandmothers. I had enjoyed Robert to my own satisfaction. I had played with her and escorted her on outdoor excursions, and I had glowed warmly at her evidence of affection for me. And I had had no responsibility for her health and general welfare. Now a problem appeared. For years, the Kinzels had dreamed and planned and saved travel folders for a European trip. It had been hovering in the background in the someday category, but all at once it crystallized. Their younger son, Don, was in Berlin at the outset of his career in the State Department and had fallen in love. His happiness could be made more complete only by having his parents there to meet his beautiful and wonderful Monica, to become acquainted with her family, and to share in the engagement festivities. Don's eagerness to have them with him was matched by their own. The long-projected trip now had a real impetus. Their reaction vacillated between, "Of course we will go," and, "How can we? What about Robert?" To strangers, this may sound a bit extreme. Robert had become an integral part of the family. The consideration of her was of prime importance. Several solutions were suggested. Put her in an aviary on a boarding basis? That was impossible at first glance. She had never been caged, and she had not only never been with other birds, but she feared them. Take her to Europe with them? This was looked into, but discarded as too hard on her, even apart from the quarantine laws in various countries. Friends and relatives were anxious about the outcome, and of course, so was I. I wanted their happiness, and I wanted Robert's safety. Perhaps those two facts do not sound proportionate, but they were. I had a sneaking suspicion all along as to what the ultimate solution would be. I would take Robert for the 3 months of the trip. However, I said nothing, hoping against hope that something would, quote, turn up, end quote. The Quakers have a delightful saying in times of indecision and stress: proceed as way opens. At a tea one afternoon, some people who knew the situation asked a neighbor what the Kinzels had decided about the quail. The answer opened the way. The neighbor said, "Well, I just don't know. They said the other day that it might be best just to give up the trip." That did it. I knew I would have a guest. I spent a busy evening, busy though I did not leave my comfortable chair in the keeping room by the fire. I was making plans vigorously. Robert would have to be able to have her outdoor hunts and dirt baths. Robert simply could not go outside my house, even if I were with her, as I am surrounded by voraciously predatory cats, most of which were welcomed at my house at any time, and often fed. That would have to end. I went to the telephone and called Walter Pierce, a very dear friend who was a builder. "Walter," I told him, "I have a problem, and I want an estimate on an enclosed patio in the angle of my keeping room and the main part of the house. Could you come up and see me about it?" "You don't mean now, do you?" "Yes, I mean now. I have made a decision, and if this is not settled now, I may be tempted to change my mind, and I just can't change my mind. It's kind of late, but I'll come." Together, Walter with his measuring tape and I with my plans, we measured, discussed 1-inch or 2-inch mesh chicken wire, dimensions and so on, detail after detail. We came up with a decision on a 10-by-15-foot room, which had to be high enough to include the outside door of the keeping room. Walter figured, I waited, he gave me the estimate, and I telephoned the Kinzels. "Would you trust Robert with me when you go away?" "Would we? But do you mean it?" "I do mean it, and all the details are settled here. Now you go to bed and dream of ocean liners and new daughters-in-law and relax." Their gratitude and relief were worth any amount of time, effort, and expense. I went to bed rather smugly pleased with myself. Then the immensity of the responsibility I was assuming swept over me. What if the little bird were not contented here? What if? It must have been long after midnight when I suddenly recalled the one occasion when Robert had spent a night away from home. On that occasion, the Kingsles had made plans to attend a church conference, which was to be held not far from their older son's home in Lexington. Robert was then still sleeping in her carton, and had ridden in the car several times and seemingly enjoyed it, and posed no problem for the visit. The plan was to be with the children in the afternoon, then leave for the night meeting, stay overnight at a motel, and attend a conference the following morning. That would give them plenty of time in the afternoon to see Robert ensconced in the son's home, and all would be well. And all was well when they left her. They had taken her own food pan and water dish, and she seemed content. What they did not realize was that her contentment was due to the fact that her family was with her and she felt secure. Nothing untoward happened until it was time to put her to bed. The son put her in her carton, which was on a shelf, not unlike its place at home. But to her, it was not home. She kept getting out of bed, as almost she never did at home. Finally, she was so exhausted that she stayed in, exhausted because she had gone all over the house, time after time, looking for Mildred and Tommy. Now, although she stayed in the carton, she cried constantly. Her cry at such a time would wring the hardest heart. It is a sad, pitiful, and mournful sound, rather low and quite drawn out. Tom and Nancy reasoned that she would quiet down when they had gone to bed and the house was dark. Not so. She cried and she cried. Finally, they took the carton into their room by their bed where she could know that they were near and she was not alone. It was a good idea, but it didn't work. The crying persisted. At last, in desperation, so that they, at least, could get some sleep, they put carton and all into the guest room and closed the door. Nancy tiptoed to the door before morning, and the poor little thing was still crying. Whether she had done so all night or resumed when she heard Nancy, in spite of Nancy's attempt to be quiet, they will never know. But she was a very unhappy little quail. Morning came at last, and Robert was brought out to the dining room and offered a piece of lettuce, which she likes the first thing in the morning. She refused it. The children were got off to school, and even while they were having breakfast, Robert was not interested. In fact, she didn't eat or drink all day. The crying stopped, but she just stood around dejectedly. It was a hard day for Nancy, who was alone with her. She put soft music on the record player, but it did not divert the lonesome little creature. Robert just stood on the arm of the Davenport waiting. At about 2:30 in the afternoon, she suddenly gave a little cry, stretched her neck out, and Nancy saw the car turning into the driveway. Now, Robert always recognized their car, and later learned to recognize mine. She chirped excitedly. The minute Tommy and Mildred came in the door, she flew to Mildred, cuddled down in the crook of her arm, and almost immediately fell fast asleep. The departure for home was delayed to let the poor, exhausted little bird make up her sleep. Finally, when Mildred's arm was almost paralyzed from having been held in one position for so long, they woke her up. Tommy took her over where her food was, and she ate and drank greedily. She cuddled in Mildred's arm during the entire drive home, sleeping part of the time, but waking occasionally to emit a few little contented chirps. Once safely inside the house, like a child who has returned to familiar surroundings after an absence, Robert made the rounds of all her favorite haunts, and then, having satisfied herself that all was well again, hopped up onto her philodendron plant, closed her eyes, sang her sleepy song, and indicated unmistakably that she was ready for bed. To bed she went, and there she slept soundly until after 9:30 the next morning. All through the day she followed either Mildred or Tommy, like a little shadow, showing them most convincingly that she did not like the idea of being separated from them. After that day, all was back to normal. The thought of this episode was not comforting me one bit, and it certainly was not soporific. I reasoned with myself that Robert was an intelligent little creature, and that things would work out. However, I must admit that the proceed as way opens idea was not very convincing at that point. The situation brought to mind several things I had read. I recalled in particular a study by Dr. Konrad Lorenz, an eminent Austrian scientist, who reported a study of a male jackdaw. As I understand it, his theory involved a belief that a young bird taken into a human environment might adapt to such environment. The jackdaw of this case history attached itself to Dr. Lorenz from the very earliest stages of the experiment. This was carried to such an extent that when the mating season approached, the object of his courtship was none other than the doctor himself. The bird brought him choicest delicacies, such as fat angleworms, as he would take to a female of his choice. Finding the human being unreceptive to having the worms put into its mouth, he compromised by trying to insert them in his ear. If we had ever doubted this scientific report, which we did not, the truth of it was forcibly brought to our attention. At the time of the first mating season, when we were wondering if she would leave us, the grandchildren were visiting. There were quail in the patio, and they knew full well that Robert was there. She gave no evidence at all of being interested in them, but for several days attached herself to a 5-year-old Thomas. Where he went, she went. If he sat on the floor playing with a toy, she was right beside him. They ate on the picnic table in the patio one day. During that time, Robert was right beside Thomas. He could wrap her in a blanket and she would stay with him quietly, though her tail feathers did suffer a bit from being wrapped up. She wore herself out following him. It was a definite transfer of her feelings toward the little boy, and somewhat of a puzzle to him. One night, as she followed him to his bedroom, he said, "Well, I guess there aren't many little boys followed everywhere by a quail." It was all over in a few days, but was a remarkable thing to witness. Sally Carragher, in her delightful book, Wild Heritage, attributes to certain animals and birds the ability to make decisions, to feel and show affection, to play and to plan. She even goes so far as to suggest that some of them recognize property rights, fair play, and so on. I myself have watched a covey of 14 quail who frequent a neighbor's feeding station and have seen them carry out a cooperative plan. One morning, after a very short snowfall, had deposited about 4 inches on the ground, one by one they came out of the woods, running very fast so as not to sink in the snow, to the place where they always found ground corn. Usually when they feed, as they always do in a close group, they head out from the circle so they can see danger should it approach from any direction. But not this time. They formed a very close little bunch, and then, all working together, as in taking a dirt bath, threw the snow with wings, tails, and heads, until it looked as though a small snowblower were at work. In about 3 minutes, they had dug a hole in the snow with rather sheer sides, 4 or 5 inches deep. They had reached bare ground and were eating contentedly. As they had their fill and departed, smaller birds came in to take advantage of the excavation. Being convinced beyond doubt that Robert had a high IQ, quail intelligence quotient, so that Robert had a high QIQ, I asked myself sternly what good my years as a practicing child psychologist were if I couldn't work out something in relation to this particular individual. Everything pointed to my being able to come up with some solution. In the first place, I was sure of complete and utter cooperation on the part of the Kinzels. In the second place, I was going to be working with an intelligent little creature. And in the third place, I loved her and had the strongest possible reason for wanting to succeed. As soon as I reached that point, I began to work on a definite plan. As always, in sleepless nights, as soon as one stops worrying and stewing and begins to think constructively, the battle is won. The plan evolved so fast and so easily that I slept soundly through the 5 a.m. news broadcast. Well, that's a fun little quail that gets attached to her people and misses them when they're gone. All right, I love you guys.